Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, November 24th, 2013. This is episode 1034. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is just $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For 50% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/techguy and use the offer code TG50. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside, use Skype. Still be toll free. Cost you nothing because it's a toll free number in the U.S. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. Remember that because if you hear something that you want to make a note of, you don't have to. James DeRuvo's doing that for you. And he puts it up all on the website there. And then eventually Josh in my office puts the audio and the video in there and everything. It's all there at 8888-ASK-LEO or techguylabs.com. I talked last show about my Xbox One. Very excited, very fun. Do enjoy it. Spent more time playing with it. And there are a few frustrations, especially because it's launch, you know, launch day. But most of the frustration is I can't figure out how in Assassin's Creed to get over there. I keep getting killed in Call of Duty Ghosts. And I'm terrible at these things. These games have really become so sophisticated. You're expected to have the reflexes of a teenager. And I do not. And I thought I was bad. I thought I was using it an awful lot. But one of the things that you can do on the Xbox is, and this is the same as the old Xbox, is you can see what your friends are up to. So I added one of my friends, a guy who does our Windows show, Paul Thurrott. He does a show called Windows Weekly, but he seems to be a rather avid gamer. And, you know, you can see in real time what your friends are doing. Paul hasn't slept in 3 days. Middle of the night, he's playing Call of Duty. Early morning, he's playing Call of Duty. And with the Xbox, you can't yet, the new Xbox One, you can't yet post live video. You can with the PlayStation 4, which is kind of cool, on a site called Twitch, twitch.tv. But you can't upload short movies. So you can show off, you know, if you have a particularly nice little moment. You can show off. Paul's been uploading movies. It's very odd to watch, to kind of see what your friends are up to. And so forth. So if you want to follow me on my Xbox, see how bad I am. You can Chief Twit Leo is my gamer tag, they call it. Chief Twit Leo. Because I'm the Chief Twit. I feel it's safer to have it. See, you see people with their gamer tags boasting, you know. You know, Killer Elite, Spec Ops, number one. I crush you. And I feel safer and better for me to go with the self-deprecating handle. Loser 123. That would be a good one for me. That way I surprise them. If I happen to do well. yeah. Anyway, it's I really like it. And I think for people who are not gamers, it has some compelling features. You can talk to the TV. You could say Xbox turn on, it turns on, and it knows all your other stuff, so it turns everything else on. You could say Xbox watch HBO and it'll go there. If you know, it'll, you could say watch a channel. I think you can even say watch a show and it'll find the show. It has a guide built in. Knows where you live. That's something that scares people. Knows where you live. It has an always on camera. When you come in the room, it says, hi, Leo. Because not only does it see you come in the room, it sees your face and it recognizes you. It can recognize up to six people in the room at the same time. And it puts yours and logs you in as it sees you walk in and logs somebody else in as it sees you walk, as sees them walk in. And I think people are a little nervous that this camera, not only is it always on, and the microphone too, because, right, you can say Xbox turn on and it'll turn on. So it's always listening, always watching. It's very 1984, right? Wasn't that the whole idea in 1984 that he had a TV in his apartment that was watching him? Me too. All the time. you know, we talked about this on the last show. Somebody was a little nervous about the whole idea. And, you know, my phone listens to me too, right? I can say, okay, Google Now to my phone. And it says, hi, Leo. And then listens for commands. I don't know why that doesn't bother me. Maybe I'm just used to it. Maybe it's like the proverbial frog in the kettle of cold water that as you heat the water up, the frog doesn't notice and forgets to jump out. By the way, I have a friend who tried that and said, no, the frog does jump out after it gets hot enough. So, there's hope. I guess it's one of those things where what are they going to see? What are they going to hear? Even if, and I guess it's not so far-fetched, the federal government, as in 1984, somehow hooked into that feed. And, you know, that'd be nice because they didn't have to put that van out in front. It's always annoying, that black van with the little windows. It just drives me crazy. So now they could just stay at home and listen in. They're still not going to hear anything worth listening to. Honey, where'd you put my slippers? Let the dog out. I said let the dog out. Let the dog in. It's not going to be the most exciting conversation. Not that I want them to spy on me. I'm just saying I don't care. What do you know? I mean, you could think of all sorts of weird scenarios. I mean, obviously, no, there aren't enough resources for everybody in the government to listen to everybody not in the government. It just can't. Presumably, if they really wanted to do that, and I think they are doing it, they would sift through it with computer technologies, doing voice recognition, listening for keywords. You know what I'm saying. I don't want to say them out loud. Listening for special phrases that might trigger an investigation. It is very 1984, isn't it? I mean, it's there. It's here. And yet, I mean, for most of the listening, the Xbox, I presume, we don't know for sure, isn't sending it to the home office or any office. It's just listening it locally. When it recognizes the waveform, then it does something, right? Right, I hope. It's ironic because Microsoft has this whole campaign called Scroogled. You can now buy Scroogled T-shirts at the Microsoft store. See, Microsoft's whole thing is that Google is listening in on you. Is Google breaking wiretap laws? For Microsoft to even say this is so disingenuous. The guy behind this is Mark Penn, who was Hillary Clinton's pollster in the 2008 election until he was fired because Clinton was doing so poorly in the primaries. But he has this, from politics, this background in kind of dirty tricks. On the front page of Scroogled.com, is Google breaking wiretap laws when they read your Gmail? What Microsoft neglects to mention in this is that Microsoft also reads your Outlook email. They have to, otherwise they couldn't do spam fighting. That's one of the features required by fighting spam. How do you think they know it's spam? A computer reads your email, just like Google does. Now, the difference is Google, besides spam fighting, also looks for keywords so they can put ads on your Gmail page. But, you know, reading your mail is reading your mail. What they're doing it for, or what they say they're doing it for, is neither here nor there. You could easily replace this phrase, is Microsoft breaking wiretap laws when they read your Hotmail. It's the same thing. So it's kind of disingenuous, I think, of Microsoft to say this. Now, even though it's just selling T-shirts and coffee mugs, you can get a T-shirt that says, you know, what does it say? It says, they're sold out of the coffee mugs. I wouldn't mind having a scroogled coffee mug, but mostly because it's just so dumb. As somebody in the chat room said, hey, focus on making better products, not on basically negative campaign ads against your opponents. Mark Penn, come on. Get a new trick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Latest news from, you know, every week I could just do another, here's the latest from Edward Snowden and The Guardian and the latest release about what's going on with the federal spy agencies. Apparently, actually, I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. The feds, NSA, I think, has 50,000 computers that they're like sleeper cells. 50,000 sleeper cell computers, presumably not in the U.S., presumably in foreign, you know, Iran, Iraq, China, Russia, wherever we feel threatened, that could, at the push of a button, you know, suddenly do malign things. Maybe some of them, you know, if I were the in charge of cyber warfare, some of them would be in power plants so that you could turn them on and say, okay, shut down the power. You got it. The only problem with doing that is escalation. That then the Chinese, who have hackers every bit as good as ours, maybe better in some cases, and the Russians and the Iranians and whoever else might do the same to us. And then it comes down to who has the best counter-terrorism, counter-spies, counter-intelligence. And it escalates. Do you ever watch The Americans? That TV show where you get the 1980s, there's a sleeper cell, there's a couple, a family. But the couple are Russian agents, but they're a sleeper cell. So they're just kind of, you know, they act normal until they're needed. And then they leap into action. Apparently, we're doing that with cyber warfare. But I got to say, as impressive as that sounds, we knew as long as 10 years ago this was happening. And at the time, we thought there were about 30,000. So now they've added 20,000 more. 50,000 computer botnet, relatively small compared to what spammers and hackers have for commercial purposes in the U.S. alone. There are botnets with hundreds of thousands of computers used to send spam or more likely to attack other computer systems. They're not trying to shut down our power grid. They're trying to shut down the gambling sites on big gambling days. So you got to believe they're getting ready for the Super Bowl. A couple of months away, right? That's a big day for bets. So what happens is the bad guys go around to the various gambling sites. It's just a variation on the old protection rackets. It would be a shame if on Super Bowl Sunday you were unable to take any bets, would it not? My associates and I can protect you from such an eventuality. And, of course, the way they protect you is by not doing it. They might even do a little shot across the bow, say, remember last weekend when you could not take any bets? We would not want that to happen to you on Super Bowl Sunday. This really happens. I'm not making this up. So the gambling site says, they have two choices. They can give the guy $100,000 to go away. Okay, the protection racket. The problem is there's an infinite supply of these gangsters. There's no limit to the number of people that can do that. Or they go to a company that specializes in what they call DDoS protection. It's distributed denial of service attack. And it's very easy to do on the internet. Happens all the time. All you have to do is take your botnet of 100,000 computers and you tell them, and they do this via remote commands, believe it or not. By the way, you may have a computer that is a bot. That's a lot of times what malware does. The goal is not to steal your passwords or mess with your system or destroy your data. The goal is to get there and sleep. Be a little sleeper cell. But what these botnets do, and the reason we know how big they are, and I've actually seen this happen, is once they infect your computer, they check in with an internet channel, a chat channel, just like our chat. And they go, reporting for action. And then they sit there quietly. And when the hacker wants them to execute, he types a special command into the chat room. The computers, which are on that chat room 24/7, just watching, go, okay, yes, my liege. And he might say, attack, you know, superbowlbetting.com. And they all, and the attack is very simple. It's not some specialized attack. They just all go there at the same time. And if 100,000 computers go to the site, go to any site at the same time, that site will no longer be visible, accessible. It'll be too busy. And the way the net is set up, you can't ignore. There's no way to prevent this. Because what they're doing is what every browser does. When you go to a site, hello, I want to have a conversation. They send what's called a SYN packet, which says, hey, let's talk. When you go to a website, hey, let's talk. I'm knocking on the door. The site sends an ACK back, says, yeah, I'm here. What do you want? And then in a normal situation, you send a request for a page. It sends you the page. You have a conversation. But what these robots do, these malicious attackers do, is they send the SYN, hello, and then they do it again. Hello. They ignore any response. Hello. Imagine 100,000 people knocking on your door. Would the mailman be able to get there? No. So that's what happens. It's very simple, and there's no way to prevent it except to get more servers, more bandwidth, to build a network so big that it could handle 100,000 knocks and still let 100,001 in. And that's what they do. That's literally what they do. At great cost, but probably better to do that than to pay the extortioners. Or you can shut down on Super Bowl Sunday. I don't know. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is taking your calls. We're going to take, I probably shouldn't take a call now because we're going to have to go right into the bottom of the hour. So we'll get, who should I talk to first when we come back?
Asher, definitely.
Asher's our, what, a five-year-old? How old is he, 12?
I think 14, he's 15 now. 15? But he was five when we talked to him a couple months ago.
He's from Nova Scotia, right? Newfoundland, okay. Asher, I think he's in the chat room going,
yes.
He's got his hand and going, oh, 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 Mr. Cotta, pick me, oh, oh, oh. So we will.
Mr. Laporte,
I got a question. It's kind of like that. I go, anybody? Oh, Mr. Laporte, anybody?
Bueller.
Mr. Laporte, I want to talk. All right, we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you, Asher, in just a minute. If you want to join Asher and the gang, there's about 1,000 strong in the chat room to talk about these topics and many more. Actually, 766 total. 67. 767 total in the chat room. 768. If I keep doing this, the show will never end. 769 in the chat room. Go to irc.twit.tv, and you too can be like a bot saying hello in the chat room. I'll never forget this. I think it was in the screensavers we had somebody from law enforcement in. He said, there is a botnet up right now. We're about to shut it down, but let's go look at it. And you go and you see there's thousands and thousands of computers. Every second another computer checks in and says, what is thy will, my master? And they're all there waiting to be sent in attack. It's amazing. All right, Asher, I'm going to call on you when we come back. 8888 Ask Leo. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our show today brought to you by our good friends, our very good friends at RigCentral.com. Hey, I got to tell you, if you are a small business and you're using the phone company for your phones, that's kind of old-fashioned. It's like using the phone company for your phone at home. You can do better with RingCentral.com. And the reason I know this is that's what we use here at the Brick House. We have about 25 employees. RingCentral saves us a ton of money over a regular business phone system. Plus, we don't have the PBX in the basement. Don't have to program it and hire people to maintain it and all of that stuff. Very affordable. Starts at $20 per month per user. But RingCentral, the reason I chose it wasn't not merely for cost savings, or it was for convenience. It was for the power of what a digital phone system can do. It was actually Russell, our IT guy, who mentioned RingCentral. We can customize all the call handling. So Heather, for instance, when she gets a call at the business number, gets that voicemail in her email. A lot of our people are not on site, right? Sarah comes in 3 days a week, but she can get calls anytime in her email. Fax messages, too, right on the smartphone. There's a RingCentral app. You can even place calls from your RingCentral app that look like they're coming from the 800 number. Incoming calls can come to you on the RingCentral app, and same with texts, business texts. RingCentral also gives you an auto receptionist. We use this. It's in my voice, I might add. Greets the callers, announces employee and department extensions. We even have a directory. You're getting calls after hours? No problem. RingCentral routes the calls to the smartphone's phone service center or voicemail. This is one I love. If you have clients on hold and you can see on the phone they're on hold, you could type a message in real time while you're on the phone with the other person. I'll be right with you. Hang on. And RingCentral's servers translate it from text to speech and then play it back. Leo says he's on the other line. That's a little more robot. Leo says he's on the other line. Hang on, he'll be right with you. Really cool. I want you to start right now, risk-free, 30 days. As I mentioned, when you buy a desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. We have a special number just for our listeners, 800-543-9980. Find out why more than 300,000 customers use RingCentral. It's one of the most popular, I think the most popular, certainly the best cloud-based phone system. And that's why we chose it. Or go to ringcentral.com, use the promo code TWIT. Ringcentral.com. 8888-ASK, Leo. All right. Asher. Leo Laporte,
Hello.
Big tech guy from Newfoundland. How do you say Newfoundland? How do you say Newfoundland?
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland. It's kind of like Newfoundland. You put the emphasis on the land, and you put less emphasis on the...
I would say Newfoundland, but it's Newfoundland.
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 That's how people here say it.
Well, I want to say it like people there say it.
Yeah.
So, Newfoundland. Newfoundland. I'll never be able to say it right. I've been saying it wrong my whole life, and I'm ancient. So what can I do for you, Asher?
Yeah, so as I said, I'm moving, and I'm planning on selling a few things and buying some stuff.
You are moving to... the family's moving to Toronto, right?
Yep.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. What I'm going to probably be doing is selling my camera that I use exclusively for YouTube videos, and I'll be replacing it with something.
Wait a minute.
It's a DSLR right now. I'm running with a Nikon D3100 right about now, but I don't really like the video quality of it. So I went in the chat room yesterday, and I asked, and Andrew OH in the chat room recommended I get the Canon HFR40, and it's on sale for $300, I think.
So this is a fundamental question, which is what? And I don't even know if the category of camcorders is going to last. I think it's in the same bunch as standalone GPSs, standalone MP3 players, because we don't really need a dedicated camcorder anymore, right? Not only does your phone do very credible video, your camera phone, but any still camera, any pocket camera will do video every bit as good, in fact, in many cases, better than a standalone camcorder. So what do you need a camcorder for? Well, all right, there is an excuse that you might have, which is I'm a vlogger. That's what Asher is. He posts videos on YouTube. And I guess there are advantages to having a standalone camera. You can record for longer periods of time, although, in my opinion, there are very few times, maybe lectures and speeches, where you'd want to record for more than a few minutes, right? Really, if you're doing video 6 seconds, I'm not kidding. I see people all the time. I'm at the kids' ball game, and they run the camera for half an hour. What are you going to do with that? You're going to watch it? No. But even if you go on YouTube and look at YouTube videos, very seldom will see a shot go for more than a few seconds. Because we've all learned from TV and MTV especially, the young folks, that to keep things moving along, you switch the camera a lot. You know, you always, every 6 seconds, you're supposed to, actually it's really more like every three, you're supposed to switch the shot. And that makes it feel more lively. See? Anyway, I do like the Canon. Those are called Vixias, V-I-X-I-A's. We actually use the Vixia HF10 in my studio. I mean, these are so good. They're as good as the studio cameras that we used on Tech TV a few years ago. High def, very good quality. You put an SD card in there, you record. There are a few things you can do better with a camcorder than you could do maybe with a still camera. Usually the zoom is quiet. It's better perhaps at focusing and white balance, although I don't think so. I think your DSLR may be better than the camcorder you're thinking about buying, to be honest. The big difference on a DSLR, that's those expensive standalone cameras like the one Asher talked about. But you know, any good DSLR or even point-and-shoot these days will shoot video. The big difference is you generally can't shoot for more than 20 minutes in one because the chip overheats. And frankly, you shouldn't be zooming. It's rare that you'll see a zoom in a movie or TV. And when it's done, it's always done with a purpose. There are a few mistakes that amateurs make all the time. One is shooting too long. Another is zooming and panning too much. Like most of the time, you could just lock that camera down and let the motion come from the object you're shooting. And instead of zooming, it's probably best to move the camera and then, you know, stop it and then move it. Stop it, then move it. Zooms and pans make people queasy. Occasionally, you'll see a zoom in a movie or a TV show. I'll give you an example. Battlestar Galactica, have you ever watched that? A lot of what they call snap zooms. And it's done for an effect. It's done for a purpose. It's not done just, you know, generically, where they'll have a shot of somebody close up and then they quickly go over to somebody else and zoom in on them. And it's usually done for a reaction, like, what? What did he just say? The Office used to do that. And that's to make it feel like it's a handheld camera. In most cases, television shows, it isn't. They even did it, I find this humorous, in Battlestar Galactica, in the computer-generated graphics. So everything's done in a computer. There is no camera. There's somebody animating it. There'll be a space battle, right, with spaceships shooting each other. And the camera will shake or get a little blurry, or they'll snap zoom over to some other camera and zoom in. That's all done by a computer to make you feel like you're you're watching handheld footage of the space battle. It psychologically works quite well to make you think it's real. Like if it were computer generated, it'd be perfect, right? So you make it imperfect with lens flares and snap zooms and blurry and out of focus. So this is the camera we use, Asher. This is the I'm holding it up on the radio so everybody can see it. It's the Vixia HFG10. These were $1,500. The one you're looking at is much less expensive. And at $300, I don't see any reason not to get one. But these have dropped to 1,000, yeah. But really, you probably, you know, even I don't buy camcorders at home. I got so many things that'll shoot video, I don't even know why. Your phone in your pocket's going to do pretty good quality video. 8888, Ask Leo. Ricky, Albuquerque, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ricky.
Hi, Leo. Nice to finally talk to you.
Well, good to talk to you.
I have two questions, kind of unrelated. One is I'd like to give my dad a new television.
What a nice gift. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's still sporting a first-generation Mitsubishi rear projection television from, like, 2002. And my question is, should I get him a high-end LED, LCD television or hold out for a 4K or an 8K?
Oh, no, I wouldn't hold out. I mean, if you want to, unless you don't want to give Dad anything for the next few years.
Okay. All right.
Or, if you want to give him something in this decade, mm-hmm. I'd probably get him an LED backlit.
What about an OLED screen?
Same thing. Now, I have an OLED, a beautiful screen, but it's $9,000, and that's the cheap one.
Yeah. I saw the calibration.
Yeah, we did a little. Scott Wilkins did a podcast calibrating it with Robert Herron from HD Nation.
I loved it. I loved watching that, actually. So
yeah, of course, you can't see on that video how good the TV looks because it's, you know, it's video shot of the TV.
Right.
But it looks good. It doesn't look so good that I would say it's worth $9,000. I think you'll be. I think Dad especially be very happy. If he's coming from a Mitsubishi, he'd be very happy to go to a DirectView LED backlit LCD. You said that correctly. They're not LED TVs, despite the fact that's what they put in big letters on the box. They are still LCDs. The difference is instead of a fluorescent tube for the backlight, they have LEDs, which last longer and are more consistent.
Right.
I think you'd be very, very... What's your budget?
Maybe $2,500, maybe no more than that.
No, I'll give you some recommendations when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Budget $2,500. Boy, there's some great choices for televisions. In fact, last show, Scott Wilkinson came on to talk about Black Friday and how you're going to see deals usually in smaller or less desirable televisions that are, you know, pretty remarkable. I mean, not half off, even 35% off, so forth. If you're in the $2,500 range, you're I would almost get a plasma. Now, Panasonic's getting out of the plasma business, so this is like the last chance to get a Panasonic plasma. In my opinion, plasmas do look better than the equivalent sized LCDs. You can get a Panasonic Viera ST60, 60 inches right now, for $1,500. That's an awfully good TV. That includes the 3D glasses. It includes everything. Panasonic's smart software is very good. He doesn't need to get a Roku box or an Apple TV. Boy, that's a good price. $1,500. The 65-inch, which is as big as they get, $2,200. So a couple of things you want to think about. The thing about plasmas, you want the room to be somewhat darker than LCDs brighter. Brighter isn't better. Brighter is more appealing. So a lot of people, when they go into the TV store, they look at the LCDs and they go, ooh, look at that, so good, because it's so bright. The colors are so vivid. That's not natural. And in the long run, it's not what you want. You want the movie on the TV to look like the movie looked in the theater. I was trying to remember where I heard this. I heard an anecdote about a cinematographer for Six Feet Under, the HBO TV show, who would go into TV stores and yell at the proprietors, do you know how much time I spend lighting that shot? And you've got that TV on super bright. That is not what it's supposed to look. He would yell, and there's no point. Don't yell at the proprietor. That's how you sell TVs. But there are very, very talented craftspeople, cinematographers, lighting directors, people like that, spending a lot of energy getting a shot to look a certain way. And it's just like music. Ideally, your speakers would reproduce the music as recorded. Ideally, your TV would reproduce the video or the film as shot. And I think plasma does a better job of that. Maybe not as appealing. Maybe Dad would like the brightness of an LCD LED. So if you want the best quality, I think a Panasonic Viera would be an excellent choice. If you want to go a step higher, the 65-inch VT60, which is what I have, is exactly your budget, $2,400. This is the one I have. Love it. Now, Dad may not need or want such a big TV, but it depends how far he's sitting from it. And again, he's coming from a TV that maybe isn't quite as vivid and bright and big. And he might say, oh, that's too big. But you're trying to duplicate the movie theater experience in some degree. So if you're 10 feet away, 65 inches is actually the size you want. For the angle of viewing. LCDs, Samsung makes excellent LCDs. So does LG. And Vizio's good, too. If the budget, you could get a bigger TV for less money with Vizio. So those are all excellent. OLED is just not, it's not price sensitive. It doesn't make sense to spend $9,000 on a TV that's 20% better. I just don't think that's worth it. You'd have to be crazy. And I'm the guy who did it, and you'd have to be crazy. And the truth is I go back and forth between my Panasonic Viera and which is in the living room, and this very expensive TV, which is in my den, and it's not that much of a difference. It's nice. It's nice. It's nice. It's not $9,000 nice. As for 4K, this new ultra-high-def stuff, watch out, because the television industry is going to try to get you to move there. Not yet, but next year or so. The problem is, there's just like when HD came out, there's no content yet. And there's really no easy way to deliver that content. Sony sells a 4K Ultra HD TV, and it comes with a hard drive with movies on it, because you can't fit an Ultra HD TV on a Blu-ray disc, or movie on a Blu-ray disc. It won't fit. It's too big. So I wouldn't worry about 4K. I would get a 1080p HD TV. For the crowd pleaser, I would get an LCD backlit by LED. And you want it bigger than you think. Dad's going to say, well, I have a 42-inch. It's huge. No. Go with 55, maybe even 60 or 65, depending on how far away he is. You can get very inexpensive 47-inch TVs, and that's fine, you know, if you're price sensitive. But if you want a real cinema experience, you want to create that home theater. And don't forget to get them good speakers and good sound. Add that into your budget. Get a $1,500 TV and spend $1,000 on good sound. That's a huge part of the overall experience in a movie or anything else. The sound is everything. 8888-ASK-LEO. So I hope that helps you, Ricky. Let me go back to you. Any other questions for that? That's, I mean, just a nice gift for Dad.
Yeah, actually, I want to steer away from plasma because we live in Albuquerque, high altitude.
Mm.
So
isn't that funny? But that is something to consider. That's right, because the pressure in the cells is important.
Yes.
And you're living in a low pressure area. Even 8,000 feet up or 5,000 feet up would make a huge difference. So yeah, stick with LCD.
Yeah. The other question is, I have a network attached storage drive, the Thetis N5200. It's kind of old, and I say old maybe 3-4 years. And I want to expand the RAID. I want to expand, add a new hard drive. And the hard drive compatibility list on the website, there's an extensive list.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Continued.
Don't worry about it.
Continued.
Yeah, because as long as the connector is, it's probably it'll be a SATA connector, right?
Yeah, it's a SATA connector.
I'd get a Western Digital Caviar Green. Those are designed for network attached storage. They spin a little slower. They last a little bit longer.
Okay.
And they're not very expensive. We're talking about $100 for a terabyte, something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. All right. Lorraine in Corona, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Lorraine.
Dorky as this sounds. Okay, this has to do with doing a complete reinstall. I wanted to wipe out my system. And I have a friend who knows enough to be just, you know, kind of dangerous about computers. And he told me if I didn't set the partition right or something like that, that malware could still, if I happened to be infected with a virus, it could survive. Is that possible?
No. Hey, let me correct myself. The chat room's reminding me. Caviar Red is for a network-attached storage. Green is just cheap. Red is for network-attached storage. This has a little bit longer life. Lorraine, you don't have to worry about that. There was a story, since debunked, about a virus that not only survived nuking the hard drive because it lived in the BIOS, but could jump what's called an air gap. It could jump from an infected computer to another computer using the sound from the speakers and a microphone. This has since been debunked. The guy who said it was a well-known security expert, so people took it, listened to him, but it's since been debunked. While theoretically you could have a virus that lives on the master boot record, I guess that would even be erased. It would live somewhere on the drive that is not erased in a clean install, or worse, in the BIOS. Or, in fact, I've heard of viruses that live in the memory on the video card. In other words, there are places on your computer where something could hide and survive a clean install. I've never seen that in real life, in practice.
Okay, and real quick, the part about when it comes to ask about the partition, what am I supposed to do? I don't understand that. It's like,
yeah, you have a couple of choices, Lorraine. Now, normally, a partition is, the idea of the partition is to take a single physical hard drive and divide it up into virtual, imaginary hard drives or partitions, just like taking a big office and putting in cubicle partitions to make it four smaller offices. It's still the same size room. You've just partitioned it off, right? So the advantage of doing that is, it from the point of view of the operating system, it looks like two drives, a C and a D, let's say. And I often do that to put the operating system and the applications on the C drive where Windows wants them to be and put the data on the D drive. That way, if I want to nuke the operating system as you're doing and start over, I don't have to erase the D drive. I don't have to change back up my data or anything. I just erase the C drive and start over. So if you want to do a partition, not a bad idea to make two. The problem with doing this is you kind of have to guess ahead of time how much room each needs.
Okay, because, yeah, the problem is I'm putting Windows 7 over Windows 7, and it's already got two divided, and I didn't know which one.
You can, when you're doing the install, there's an option. In fact, it's not a bad idea to select this, select options, and delete all partitions and start over.
Oh, okay.
That's built into the Windows installer. But you'll see it says there's a, I think it says hit O for options at one point. And then you'll get to the disk partitioner. You'll see the partitions. You can delete any that you don't want. You can repartition. And I think that's a good idea. Now figure out how much room do I need for Windows in my applications and reserve that much plus, say, 50%. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. Coming up at 33 and a third after the hour, digital photography with our photographic expert, our guru, Chris Marquardt. Phone number is 888-827-5536. But to make that easier to remember, we've got it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. I'm holding in my hot little hands the Nokia 2520. This is the... There are two companies now, soon to be one, that make hardware based on Microsoft's Windows RT operating system. Microsoft, among other things, has really muddied the waters with three different operating systems, all of which look exactly the same. In fact, if you look at the Microsoft ads or you go to a store and you look at the three units, they'll all have the Tile World interface. That's what David Pogue of Yahoo calls it. The Microsoft used to call it the Metro UI. Metro is what they called it, until a company in Germany called Metro sued them. Then Microsoft said, it's not Metro. It's the modern UI. But see, if I say, when you go to the store and you look at Windows machines, they all have the modern UI, that's not clear what that is. The Tile World, I think, is actually, it's David's name. It's a little demeaning, but I think it is actually accurate. The Tile World interface. But despite the fact that all three devices, Windows Phone, Windows tablets, and Windows, what do you call it? Big boy Windows. Despite the fact they all look the same, they are, in fact, three different completely incompatible operating systems. Software for one will only run on that one. It won't run on any of the others. And the only one that your older Windows software will run on is Windows Pro, Windows Big Boy. It won't run on your Windows RT. See, Microsoft doesn't even call it RT anymore. They're really messing with us. They don't want us to have a name for anything they do. They want it all to be called Windows. But that's not helpful to users because this is a very different product. This version of Windows, which used to be called Windows RT, is designed for tablets. It runs on ARM architecture or ARM processors. It's one of the reasons it's incompatible. It uses a different processor, microprocessor. It's also one of the reasons Microsoft has a hard time because they realize you can't tell people, well, you want the ARM version of Windows as opposed to the x86 version. People are going to go, what are you talking about? This is the tablet version. So to get back to the beginning, that was a long parenthetical statement explaining what Microsoft is doing with their nomenclature. To get back to where I started, this tablet I've got in my hot little hands is one of two tablets that run Windows RT, the ARM-based, the tablet, the true tablet form of Windows. This one's from Nokia. It's the 2520. Microsoft makes one as well called the Surface 2. By the way, that's as distinct from the Surface 2 Pro, which runs an Intel processor and runs Windows 8 Professional, not Windows RT, which has no name. It's just Windows. You know, I don't even know why I try talking about this stuff. The Nokia 2520, it has some flavor of Windows on it, and I like it. And I do think this is the future from Microsoft's point of view. They may be wrong, but this is where they want to go, is with a RT. To further confuse things, RT does in fact have a desktop that looks pretty much exactly like the desktop on Windows Pro, but is not. And it comes with desktop versions of Microsoft Office, but that's the only desktop application you can run. You know what? I forget it. Buy an iPad. Just forget I mentioned it. You see where I'm going? See the problem I have here? Marianne in Chatsworth, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Marianne.
Oh, hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Marianne.
Okay, I've got an issue with my new cell phone. I used to have an Android and Verizon as the carrier, and 2.5 months ago got a Samsung 4G. I really like this phone, the display and et cetera. It's a lot easier to look at, you know, for, as a smartphone feature. But I am not able, I do not get alerts for the visual voicemail app on here.
That's up to your carrier. Are you getting voicemail messages on it?
I do, although there's no alert. So if it's sitting on my desk and I just happen to casually walk, yeah, I need it, the phone to jump up and yell at me, come look at
you've got voicemail!
It doesn't do that.
And you said AT&T?
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if, in fact, I would guess that that's a setting within visual voicemail. So what you need to do is, so in visual voicemail, there is, if you go into the settings, there's a checkbox that says display message notifications. You're right. It doesn't seem to have anything like ring a big bell and let me know. But it will only, you know, so it only tells you in the status bar. There puts a little teeny weeny icon in the upper left-hand corner of the screen. You want it to go, hey! Hey, listen. Hey, Marianne, you have a message.
Yeah, it needs to be trained. So you're saying if I go through, when I hit visual voicemail, it says welcome to visual voicemail.
Yeah, first of all, you have to set it up with AT&T.
I have to go through there.
Yeah.
And, well, you know what? I start to do that, and then all these screens come up, and I think,
I know,
what do they want from me? Is this going to cost more money?
Yeah, no, and in some cases it does, and I can't remember if AT&T charges you for this or not. They will tell you. At some point, you can have it for a month for free, but then we're going to charge you, something like that. I don't remember if they charge you. I should probably check and see what is on my bill. Here's an alternative. Since you are using an Android phone, the other way you could do it is you could set up Google Voice to be your voicemail system.
Google Voice?
Yeah, it's free, voice.google.com.
Okay.
And what Voice does is when your phone rings, it will pick up. It has some really nice features. For instance, it can ring multiple numbers. It can ring your home number and your voicemail and your office at the same time. It can take messages. It can email you voicemail messages as well as have visual voicemail messages. It also attempts, and I say attempts because it doesn't do a great job, to do a text transcription of messages. But often that's sufficient to kind of get a gist of what the message is without actually listening to it. And usually phone numbers get transcribed correctly, so you can just tap the phone number in the text transcription and dial the number. All of these things, I think, are better than the visual voicemail that AT&T offers.
So this would actually be a way to go through it to give me an alert.
And Google Voice will ring a bell, pop up a message.
Okay.
It will do more to let you know. So it's not quite the same as visual voicemail, and you really, it's one or the other. Because what will happen when you set up Google Voice is it will then say, okay, I'm going to configure your phone to use visual voicemail and not AT&T's. Rather, to use Google Voice and not AT&T's visual voicemail.
Now, do they tack on a charge?
Nope. It's free.
No. It's free.
Now, if you want to use the same number, you'll have to port the number over, which I don't recommend. So you're going to have a new number. But you could pick the number. And I think sometimes that's even better because then your underlying AT&T number never changes, but you can change your Google voicemail number. I am surprised, and I'll have to look at it, but my experience is the same. I'm looking at my AT&T phone that it will put. So what it does is it puts an alert in the status bar, and then when you pull down the status bar, it'll say you have a voicemail from, you know, down in the notifications up at the top. But
it doesn't do that.
Okay, well, that I can at least turn on that. And that just launched your visual voice. Oh, you haven't even set it up. That's why it doesn't do it. You got to set it up.
Okay.
So go through the setup process.
Okay.
And then once you do, you'll have your visual voicemail, and then you press the little three. This is another problem with Android. There's three dots in the lower right-hand corner. That, believe it or not, that's the menu.
Wait, though, this is the Samsung.
Yeah, so Samsung has a little menu button. That makes it
okay.
Easier. Press the menu button, go to settings, and then you can, in settings, you can tell it, I want to be notified. It won't ring a bell, but at least it'll pop up something. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Let's see. I think we helped Marianne. The visual voicemail. AT&T, this is part of the problem. It's one of the reasons I don't like phones from carriers. I don't like carrier cruft. And this is an example of carrier cruft. AT&T puts its own visual voicemail on there. It's a special app from AT&T. And it doesn't. I don't think it works very well. It's not well designed. This is often the case, in my opinion. When you get, this is why I like the Nexus 5, for instance, which is a pure Google experience. There's no carrier stuff on it because it doesn't come from a carrier. It comes from Google. And there's no manufacturer stuff on it because Google says, look, we want to make a Google experience phone. So the visual voicemail is AT&T's attempt to give an Android device, your Samsung device, parity with your iPhone. Remember, that was one of the things Apple introduced that was such a wonderful thing on the iPhone. Came out with the very first iPhone, visual voicemail. Instead of having to dial a voicemail number at your carriers and then going through the arcane, you know, press, you know, 7 to delete, 8 to listen, 1 to repeat, all of that stuff. You just had it as it was an app on the screen, and there was your voicemails. You press the play button, you listen. Now, that required the phone to download the audio from each voicemail. So, you know, it was a little bit more work for the phone. And it wasn't exclusive on the iPhone for a long time. Well, now AT&T's added it as a feature, which doesn't work all that well. I think, Marianne, if you set it up, I cannot remember if it costs. Pay attention. They'll tell you if it costs. I think it does not on AT&T. So set it up, and then you'll see in the menu command that you could turn on notifications. At least it will put a little icon in the top there. You slide down your notification window, and you'll see you've got a voicemail from somebody. I don't know if it makes a ringing sound. You know, I turn off ringing sounds. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to talk to anybody. That's why. Ole, Seal Beach, California. You're next. Hi, Ole. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, hi. Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, doing pretty good. Couple of questions for you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, listen. I buy and sell used new books on Amazon and a couple other sites on the internet. And for the last 3-4 years, I've been spoiled because I'm using an iPad. As it turns out, my old XP computer running XP Home Office, has about a 120 gigabyte hard drive in it, and it's completely full and full, overflowing with, I guess, uninstalled Windows updates which can't be installed.
Ah, that's a big problem.
Yeah, so I'm going to put in another hard drive, a new hard drive. Well, not a new hard
drive. I'm not sure you need a new hard drive in there. You know what? I presume what you're... Well, go ahead. I shouldn't jump ahead. You're going to put a new operating system on the new hard drive?
No, I was going to put in a different hard drive from my different computer, an XP, it already has Windows on it. So I'm wondering what to do with this.
That's not going to work. You understand you won't be able to then just turn it on and boot.
Right. I'll have to...
Because it doesn't have the same hardware. And Microsoft's genuine advantage, which is a genuine disadvantage to users, will say, hey, that's not the same computer. What you want to do, if you haven't installed this from the computer that's having trouble, is wipe the drive and start over. Often... Just, you know, running a good format, not a quick format, but a low-level format on that drive and putting new stuff on it will get it all better.
Okay, I don't have that, but I do have the I do have all the numbers.
Yeah, well, you need the disk.
Yeah, I don't
know why they sell. It just baffles me. Well, I know why. They sell computers without operating system disks. It's useless. You got to have an operating system disk. Obviously. What if the hard drive fails? What if there's a problem? What if you get a bug? How do you reformat and reinstall? Every computer needs a hard drive, needs an operating system disk. The reason that Dell and others don't bundle those is because Microsoft says, hey, piracy, it's so terrible. Here, and Microsoft has so many layers of anti-piracy that just get in the way. Here, if you don't sell a disk with the computer, we'll charge you less for Windows because they don't really want people to have a disk. But that's a very short-sighted point of view, because obviously when you get in a situation like this, you need a disk.
Okay, so you're saying that the other computer, I can't exchange the hard drive.
No.
Because, Microsoft will...
Yeah, they say you're pirating it.
Oh, man, even though I own both computers.
Well, sometimes you're going to have to call them and say, and explain, as you just did to me, what you did, and they may decide, it's up to them, whether to let you activate it on the old computer. But you're going to have all sorts of other issues because the drivers aren't compatible, different hardware, right? So yeah. you generally speaking, you can't do what you want to do, which is take a hard drive out of one computer, put it in another, and boot it up.
Okay, that was my primary question.
Yeah. What you really want to do is get a copy of XP. Now, the good news is they're cheap. You can go on eBay and buy one. You want a full install. You've got the serial numbers.
Right.
Yeah. Usually when you get that new computer, nobody ever does this, but it tells you, hey, make your recovery disks. Make your recovery disks. Get some DVDs and make a recovery disk. It's a terrible system. A, because people don't do it. And B, if it fails at any point, you don't have any recovery disks. So I really wish people would just ship a Windows install disk with a computer. With Dell, you can pay them extra to do that, and it's worth it.
And
you can also call Dell. Another thing you could do is call Dell and say, here's the model I have. Send me the system recovery disk. That's probably your best bet.
Okay.
And then they usually will do that for a nominal fee, $20 or thereabouts. Then you get the disk that was designed for that computer. And running that and running a full clean install on that, you can even use that old drive. Flush it out. We'll wipe the drive, wipe all your data, so make sure you make a backup of it, and get it, and it will end up looking exactly like it looked the day it came from the factory 10 years ago. Now, do this before March, because in the spring, Microsoft's going to end of life Windows XP and will no longer offer updates for it. You want to do this now. Get that disk as quickly as you can, install Windows XP, and then run Windows Update. It's going to take you quite a few reboots and updates because you'll go to Service Pack 3. You'll want to add all the updates and fixes since then. Those things you can't install right now because it's clogged up. You want all of those because if there's a patch for a computer that is not applied, that computer's a sitting duck on the internet. So the other choice you have, and you know this is an interesting choice, is not to put Windows on it at all, but to get a free operating system like Ubuntu Linux. You can get that from ubuntu.com. You don't have to call Microsoft or anything. You download the disk on your other computer, burn a CD or a DVD with Linux on it, then run the installer, wipe the disk, and instead of writing Windows onto it, you're going to write Linux onto it, Ubuntu onto it, and you're going to get actually quite a nice computer, frankly better, more secure. And come springtime, continued support. My real concern for people running Windows XP is that come the spring, you are really going to be a sitting duck because Microsoft's just going to stop fixing it. So if the bad guys discover a hole, and they will, you're dead. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, he's the photo guy, joins us every week. Well, it's somewhere in between week and month to talk about digital photography. Hello, Christopher.
Hey, Leo. I think it's usually close to a week.
It's usually every week. We missed you last
usually
week.
Usually, yeah.
But you were stuck on an island?
I was stuck on an almost island at the North Sea in a little town where we were vacationing. And it was just, I just got stuck there right beneath a lighthouse.
You couldn't get off because the weather?
No, it was just a timing issue, pretty much.
Well, anyway, we're glad you're here.
Yes, I'm glad I'm back. It was beautiful there. It was really beautiful there. But I'm back now. So let's bust a photo myth.
Yes.
Let's bust the myth is you will have to reinvent the wheel to become a good photographer.
What does that mean, even? I don't even know what that means.
Well, you know, photographers try a lot to be different, especially when they're new. They try to stick out. They're trying to, what you call, build their style.
Yeah.
Do their really their very own thing.
Not me. I just steal from the best. I just try to copy Ansel Adams.
Which is, I think, a pretty good approach. If you're starting out with photography, that, I think, kind of might be putting the cart before the horse. I would say don't be afraid to do the seemingly mundane thing. The secret, I believe, after years and years and years of doing is, and I try to be original, I try to do the different thing. I think you will initially, well, you will find that it's really hard to do the new thing, and you will initially probably be more successful if you simply do some really good and solid work. And a good example is if you go on Flickr Explore, go to flickr.com/explore. There are some good visuals there. That's where the pictures bubble up that have some that have a lot of comments and a lot of action and a lot of views. flickr.com/explore. And I would say 95% of those pictures are just really good, solid work.
They're good, yeah. They're the best.
They are really good, yeah. But they are not really doing something entirely new. They're doing the things that you want.
There's a picture of a duck. There's a picture of ballet shoes. A picture of cherries. A picture of a rock. It's all the same things. They're just nice.
You know what I think? What belongs there is really, really solid work. Good exposure. Again, I keep coming back to that. Good exposure. So you want to learn how to do how you control exposure. You want to have good colors. Colors are really important.
I will say one thing. You'll see a lot of HDR photography.
Not as much as you did about a year ago.
Don't do it.
when I looked there half an hour ago, I was really surprised how little over-the-top HDR
people
was.
Have kind of gotten tired of that, I think. That's where you take a picture and you make it really dramatic by tweaking the dials all the way up, you know, and it ends up looking almost like a painting.
Yeah. I think what's really important is photographers need to learn how to take a good picture, how they have to learn why they like a certain type of picture.
Yeah.
If you manage to transfer that from being a gut feeling, like you feel it's a good picture, to understanding what causes that feeling, what makes it a good picture, you're pretty much there. So,
in other words, take a picture of your cat. It's okay.
It is perfectly okay to take a picture of your cat, of your kids. As long as you have the technique down.
I appreciate this tip because I often will not take a picture because I feel like I told you this. I was in Paris and I thought, I'm not bringing my camera. Everybody takes pictures of the Eiffel Tower. Yes. What's the point?
No, it's a good place to practice, to try different angles. You know what creativity is? Creativity is if you create something new from what already exists.
Ah.
And if you have a solid foundation, if you know how to get a solid picture, it will be really easy to create from that starting point.
Right.
But if there is no foundation, then it's really hard to come up with something new. So learning the basics, getting that foundation is the stepping stone to be really good and really creative.
I have a feeling that what the advice you gave is true, not just for photography, but for all creative endeavors. When people first turn to write, or they first try to paint, or they first try to act, it's very often the case that they'll imitate what they've seen. You'll write like your favorite writer, and that's okay. It's okay.
I mean, let's look at a few genres. Architecture. If you learn how to keep the lines straight, that's a very good first step. In landscape photography, if you learn to manage the different brightnesses between the sky and the foreground, then that's a very good starting point. In portraiture, if you learn to get natural expressions instead of the duck faces, then that's a good point. That's a good starting point.
So are you saying if you go to flickr.com/explore and you see a picture that grabs you, try to understand why it grabs you, perhaps?
Yes, that is pretty much the point. Try to understand why you like a picture or why you don't like certain pictures. And by learning that, by understanding what makes you go wow on a picture, you will be able to kind of recreate that. And then don't be afraid to recreate that. Don't be afraid to try to copy that. Steal it. Yeah, that's good. That's fine. It's absolutely perfectly fine to try to mimic what good people do, what good photographers do, and then you will learn from that.
Wasn't it Picasso who said great artists steal?
I think he said that, yeah.
I mean, he was okay.
I think Steve Jobs said that too.
Yeah. Picasso said, good artists borrow, great artists steal. And he was a great artist, so there you go. Yes. Chris Marquardt is a great photographer, and you can catch his work on Flickr as well. He's N-U-B-U-I, Nubui. Or visit Discover the Top Floor. You can find out about his workshops, see his works, and, of course, get his great podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, all sorts of wonderful stuff if you are interested. And, Chris, our assignment this month...
Current assignment is fast.
Fast. And do we have, a week or two? You can do it next week or the week after?
I think the week after next week.
Okay. Two more weeks. So you can do something about maybe a fast Thanksgiving. Or how about you're fasting on Thanksgiving? See, fast could be anything. Could be sitting in front of a Thanksgiving meal and not eating. That would be fast as well. Give it a try. Chris Marquardt, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And I hope I will see you next week.
I'll be there.
Our digital guru, our photographer extraordinaire, with some great information. Chris Marquardt, thank you for being here. If, by the way, you want to participate in that photographic assignment, simple enough. Just take the picture. They have to be new pictures. And upload them to Flickr, FLICKR.com. The nice thing about Flickr, it's free. And so you can just upload it there, create an account if you don't already have one. It's a Yahoo property, so you probably do have an account. And then make sure you add it to the Tech Guy group. There's a very large group of Tech Guy participants, and that's where you'll upload it. Do tag it with the word fast so we know it's kind of your submission. And you can submit up to one photograph a week, so you can you could do two or three more if you do it quickly. Flickr.com. Make sure you go to the Tech Guy group. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Actually, all that information, along with everything else I mentioned, on our website, TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Jonathan in Wirtz, Virginia. Hey, Jonathan. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm a longtime fan of yours, and I've been following you from since Tech TV and ZDTV. And I've got two things. One, on your recommendation of listening to your show, I switched from my old Samsung Fascinator. It was on USA to run around with them. I switched to a local carrier called Telus and got the iPhone 4S. And I've got two questions. One, it says 2.7 gigabytes. What's that?
Yeah, on iPhones and iPads, there is an other category that is often a large chunk of your total memory. I wouldn't freak out about it. There's not much you can do about it except restoring the phone, literally, you know, redoing the phone. It is application data. So it's all the text messages and pictures you've ever received, newspapers in your newsstand, things like that. Don't worry about it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Website, techguylabs.com. Yeah, other is a thing that drives iOS users crazy, but there's nothing really you can do about it. And you don't need to. You don't want to. The only way to get rid of it is erasing and starting over. That seems like a long way to go. I think if you erase old SMS messages, that reduces it somewhat. It saves everything. But it's basically application data, and that's why you see it. And you only see it on your iTunes if you look at what disk spaces use. And it's driven me crazy for years, but it's nothing really to do about it. Every application has to have its own data area, saved games, things like that. Tony in Macon, Missouri, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Tony.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hey. How's it going out there?
Oh, it's going good. It's a little chilly, but, you know, at least we're
not. It's here. It's 27, and I'm watching your ex-quarterback that you wish they still had.
Oh, man. Don't talk about Alex Smith.
Yes.
I don't want to hear about it. Is he winning again?
Yes, we are. It's going back and forth on the score.
I think they're undefeated, aren't they, Casey?
We were up until last week.
Oh, lost last week.
Yeah, Denver.
That's right. I watched and cheered along with along with all the other Niners fans.
I listened to both Texo guys on the pros and cons about the new hardware on the gaming device.
Ah, console gaming. Are you a gamer?
No, but I have grandkids that come over and they keep bugging me.
Well, okay, so let me talk
about the old stuff because they got sales on bundles now.
Yeah, I would get an old one because The new ones, the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, don't play the old games. So you're only able to play the games at the new games on there.
Right.
So what are your kids? What do the kids play?
Well, they want to play
Call of Duty Ghosts.
Call of Duty and stuff like that.
Well, the good news is PlayStation 4 and Xbox One both have Call of Duty Ghosts. So you can play the new Call of Duty. They look great. Marginally better on the PlayStation 4.
Right.
The PlayStation, here's my take on the new consoles. The PlayStation 4 is for gamers.
Right.
It has a few additional features as the old PlayStation did. You can Amazon Video and Netflix with a little work, you can get those going. The Xbox One is Microsoft's Trojan horse in the living room. They really want to do more than games. They've got the games, but they're really focusing.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
Yeah, on doing so much more. And I actually like the Xbox One a lot. I feel like there's no compelling reason to buy the PlayStation 4. Get the PlayStation 3. It does all the same things and has the entire library of games, including Call of Duty Ghosts. Whereas the PlayStation 4 is promise for the future. In a couple of years, when all the games you want are on the PlayStation 4 only or the Xbox One only, then you will want to upgrade. But I think for now, especially if it's kids, you're probably fine with either of the older consoles.
Well, my question is, they have the 250, I can't remember, they have the 250 gigabyte and the 12 gig. What's the difference?
There's a very inexpensive, you're talking about the Xbox 360?
Yes.
Yeah, there's an inexpensive Xbox with very little storage and one with a larger hard drive. It's hard to say. You're going to end up wanting more storage, I think. But it is a lot more expensive. Microsoft really wanted to get the Xbox down to $99. But the only way they could do it is by cutting memory and by making you subscribe to a expensive yearly plan.
Right.
Here's what I think is going to happen. In 2 years, those kids, if they're still coming over to play the games, and you want them to be, right?
Right.
This is something you want.
Well, I want to set it up in the back bedroom where they go and they play all their stuff.
How old are the kids?
5 and 7.
Yeah, okay. So now I think the older one would be fine.
Yeah.
And then, because in a couple of years, you are going to want to upgrade, because then all the new games will be coming out only on the new platform. I know for a while, you're going to see games coming out on both. But in a year,
right,
nobody's going to write games for an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3, because the future is the new consoles.
Right. It's kind of like with Windows 8.
Right. So I would get a bigger hard drive there, either on the PS3 or the Xbox 360. I would get the larger capacity. Because you'll need it.
Would that be 12 or 250?
250. You're talking about PlayStation now. Yeah, 250. Because it saves a lot of stuff, a surprisingly large amount of stuff on that hard drive. Plus, the PlayStation 3 has a lot of online games that are quite good. I think Journey is an interesting online-only game. A lot of the games can be downloaded online. Then you don't have to go to the GameStop and buy the disc, blah, blah, blah. But you can't do that if you don't have a big enough hard drive. So get the big hard drive.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And I
think
you're.
You too. And I watch your broadcast and everything during the week.
Oh, that's great. You're a great grandpa. My mom does that for her grandkids too.
Well, I just got into this computer electronic stuff, and I'll tell you, it almost put me in the poorhouse.
Oh, it can do that.
Yeah.
It can do that. You're just getting started.
I have learned a lot.
The cost of the game console is nothing compared to the cost of the games.
That's true.
The games are $60 each.
I know.
And there's a new one every, few months.
Well, I got a big TV, and then I had to get, I have a notebook, and now I got a tablet, too.
Oh, you better stop listening. I'm sorry, Tony.
Tommy.
It's nice to talk to you.
You too.
Take care. Paul, Lake Forest, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, call. Paul. Caller, Paul. Paul the call. Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Hey, I remember back in 1998 finding you and Kate Patello and thinking, my people have a computer cable channel.
I always thought that's what it was. You know, it's like, finally, we're being acknowledged, the geeks that we are. And finally, there's something for me. I know what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm glad you watched way back then.
Yes. I think Tech TV was sort of the television professionals came in and kind of screwed up a good thing. But,
But now we're doing it on the internet, and frankly, I think it's better because we don't have to make TV executives happy. That's a no-win proposition I've learned in my years. You can't make them happy. So that's our podcast network, twit.tv, and we do much of the same kind of stuff, yeah. So what can I do for you?
Well, I have a relatively new Macintosh, and I'm kind of new to Macs. And I have a Bluetooth speaker adapter that I use for my – I want to, like, stream podcasts or audiobooks over my stereo.
Yeah.
The only trouble is that my Macintosh is very greedy, and it always wants to pair with this thing, even when I don't want it to.
Right. That's kind of in the nature of Bluetooth, yeah. If it sees it, it will pair it. The only thing you could do is turn off Bluetooth on the Mac.
That's basically what I've done.
Yeah. I don't know of any way to tell the Mac, don't pair with a visible previously paired visible Bluetooth device. And normally, that's what you want. So I don't know of any way to say, I'll have to look in the settings. When we come back, maybe I'll find something for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about the tech TV and the screensavers and Kate and Leo. There's a new Kate and Leo in town. Tim and Don. I don't know which one's Kate. At IT Pro TV. Have I told you about this earlier. It's so cool. Tim and Don came by about, 2 months ago. And they said, look, if you're mad, I apologize. I said, what? We stole everything. We copied everything you do. I said, what? They said, well, here's the deal. We've been teaching people for more than 10 years with certification programs, you know, how to get your A-plus certificate and that, you know, your Comp TIA stuff, your MCSA stuff, your Cisco certs. And we watched the screensavers. We loved the screensavers when we were younger. And then we saw your talk at the NAB. The Broadcast Minds talk, and we said, hey, you know, maybe we should be doing this for teaching people to get their certs. And they founded IT Pro TV. Learn without even knowing IT, without even knowing it. And I, you know, when I saw what they're doing, I said, I am thrilled. First of all, I'm honored that there are Don and Tim right there wearing the Twitch fezzes. I said, I am honored that you would, their set, look at this set on the live stuff, looks just like the screensavers set. I am honored that you would copy this, and you're in an area we're not in, which is teaching people how to get their certs.
Hi, and welcome to IT Pro TV.
They're just great. And what a great way to learn.
And I'm
live, or you can watch their episode library, and they have a ton of episodes in a lot of different categories, more coming all the time. Yeah, Comp TIA, Microsoft, and Cisco certs. But the live stuff is cool because you can actually, just like us, you can watch them happening live. And there's a chat room, so you can participate in chat. You can ask questions. When there's nothing live going on, just as with us, they'll do a previously recorded stuff. They're using TriCasters. They're using Heil PR mics. They're doing everything we're doing, but dedicated to the world of information technology. So when you want to jumpstart your career in IT, or maybe you're working in the field and you want to keep up on what's going on. This is a really fun, engaging way to prep for the exams, to continually learn. There's over 100 hours of content now with 20 hours added each week. I just think these guys are great. Now, I would like you to try it. Normally, it's $57 a month, or you can subscribe for a year for $570. But if you go to itpro.tv/techguy, and use the offer code TG50, you'll get 50% off for the life of your account forever. That means $28.50 a month. That's less than one of those prep books a month. $285 for the entire year, which makes it even more affordable. And you're going to I feel like I should just have this on all the time, you know. And I know you do Twit on all the time, so many of you. Just have this on all the time, and you'll be learning and learning and learning. You'll be it's amazing what they do here. Speeds of communication, fiber versus cable. Videos on Android, installation media, certification procedures, compatibility on Kindle device, practice exams or sims available. I mean, just on and on and on and stuff. This is questions and answers. Very much like what we do. I'm really impressed. And I want you to participate. I want you to get involved. So would you do me a favor? Go to itpro.tv/techguy. Watch the videos. Watch the live stuff. And then if you want to subscribe, use the offer code TG50. And then tell Tim and Don and the gang that you heard about it on the Tech Guy show. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater and all that jazz. Digital photography. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Give us a ring. We can talk. I'm looking at, we had a caller who said, how do I keep my Macintosh Bluetooth from pairing when I see, when it sees my something? And as far as I know, I'm looking at the Bluetooth setup here. For instance, my Mac has paired up with one of my coworkers' keyboards. Now, that can be a problem because if Tony starts typing, it'll appear on my Mac. But it looks like really the only thing I can do is unpair. I could disconnect. And to do that manually, are you sure you want to remove Tony's keyboard? You have to pair this device again if you want to use it later. And that would be too inconvenient to do with something you just wanted to temporarily remove. So I think really your only choice, unless I'm mistaken, is to just turn Bluetooth off when you don't want it to pair. Maybe somebody knows better. Call us, 888-ASK-LEO, or perhaps go to the chat room. You can find that at our website, techguylabs.com. I don't know of any other way to do that. You can remove a device, but then you'll have to repair if you want. And that's just a pain. You don't want to do that each time. Alan in La Porte, Colorado. Wow. Hi, Alan. How you doing? Wow. La Porte, Colorado.
La Porte, Colorado. You're correct. Awesome.
You know, my dad actually did a tour of all the La Portes. There's La Porte, Alaska, La Porte, I think, Oregon, La Porte, Colorado, perhaps the biggest.
La Porte, Indiana.
La Porte, Indiana. Yeah. We La Portes got around.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Hey, I'm calling you on my Ring Central phone that just backed up to my Carbonite, and I had to log on with my LastPass.
Well, you get extra credit for using all our sponsors.
And then I used SpinRite on this computer yesterday to get it right.
Okay, here's how I know somebody's listening to us a little too much. That's great, Alan. Thank you.
I'm a small business owner, and I've got clients that I'm trying to get to email. I'm emailed back and forth. I have to send them out different things. I have newsletters that go out, and usually they're in PDFs. And listening to you and Steve Gibson talk about it, you know, you shouldn't put links. You shouldn't click on links.
Yeah. You know, you've heard us talk about this crypto locker virus, right?
Absolutely.
That's how it spreads. It's an attached PDF, or what looks like an attached PDF in an email. Turns out it's in a zip file. If you look inside the zip file, you'll see something that looks like a PDF. It's not, and it's executable. And once you've figured that out, it's too late. So that's right. You probably don't want to do that. Now, I typically will send links instead of attachments.
Okay.
Even links are dangerous because, you know, we recommend generally that you don't click on links because links can hide their real destination. If you use HTML-based email, then you can have the visible text say something different from where you're actually going to go. So you could say Bank of America secure login as the visible text, but if somebody clicks it, it goes to hacker.com. So there's even links in email are dangerous, and we counsel people to be very careful about those. Yeah. But if you're in business, you have to do that, right?
Right. So is it better to go through something like Constant Contact or MailChimp to send my emails and then have them link to my like a SkyDrive account or a Dropbox or Google Drive
yes.
for them to pick up their
yes.
PDF?
Yeah, the couple of reasons to do that. First of all, if you're sending out a lot of emails, your ISP may start to wonder if you're spamming. And sometimes they'll even cut you off. Whereas if you use a newsletter service like Constant Contact or MailChimp, both of them are excellent, they do the mailing for you. And they have all the right, you know, settings, the opt-in settings and everything, so that people don't get spammed by you. And I think that's good. You're making sure that, you know, they make sure you only send to people who want that email. There's always an unsubscribe link in the email. I think that's good. And then furthermore, yeah, I think using a file sharing system, we recommend ShareFile. That's what I use. That's a paid mm-hmm. service from Citrix, since you use all our other sponsors. I might mention them as well.
Is that paid for the client?
No, it's... Well, here's the advantage. If you use Google Drive, they have to have a Google account. Use Dropbox, they have to have a Dropbox account. If you use ShareFile, they don't. They get a link. They'll get an email from ShareFile with a link in it, which then gives them a very simple download page. And so there's no sign up. And you have... It's really made for business. So you have additional features like you'll get a notification when they download it. You can also have that link expire. So if you're sending them a link to an invoice, for instance, that's only good for 30 days, you can say after 30 days, it's no good anymore. Things like that. And you have unlimited bandwidth. Citrix does. It's called ShareFile.
ShareFile. Okay.
And it's exactly made for this problem, which is I need, and often happens in business, I need to get a file to a customer or a client, but I don't want to do this insecure, attach it to an email. There's other problems with that as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because sometimes it's invoices, sometimes it's other things that are in there.
Well, and you know, ShareFile's HIPAA compliant, for instance. It has all the mm-hmm. proper encryption to be legal for the federal government to, you know, for medical uses, things like that. I think it's not cheap, but I mean, it's not super expensive either. It's just not free. But I think it's really a better choice for exactly what you're talking about.
Well, I don't have to worry about HIPAA. I'm a veterinarian, so they call me the tech vet.
There's no, you don't have patient record requirements for veterinarians, huh?
Oh, absolutely. But we don't have the HIPAA part of it, but we do have to watch out and we still have to watch out for records and stuff like that.
Rightly so. Lawyers, veterinarians, whatever. Absolutely. You're often sending stuff that should be private. Just between you and your client, your patient,
right?
So this is good for that kind of thing. You know, Dropbox is not. Dropbox is not going to necessarily guarantee that kind of privacy.
No, I will go to Citrix and look up ShareFile.
If it's for business, it's I can't remember what it costs, but it's not very expensive. I use it.
No,
it's how I send. So I have to send frequently. Audio to the stations that take the show, you know. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, the tech mm-hmm. guy, and so forth. And that's how I do it, because I've found that for a variety of users, it's the easiest, most straightforward. I never get any questions. It's always like, oh, I got it. Here's the link.
Okay.
Works nicely.
All right. Well,
are you a big animal vet? Are you a pet doctor?
I'm a equine doctor. I'm a horse doctor.
Neat.
And I drive a lot, and so I listen to a lot of podcasts, like Android, Windows Weekly.
Oh, well, you're an expert by now. That's awesome. That's awesome.
I love to listen to Steve Gibson with GRC, and it's very interesting. Yeah. What you guys.
Why do they call you the tech doctor? Is there a lot of tech in equine veterinaries?
No, because I am technical.
Ah, you understand this stuff.
I have a Samsung Slate that I go out and it's a 10-inch Samsung. It's on Windows 7, and I have it in my truck. I write out their invoices, print it off on a little printer there.
That's cool.
I come back. I've got three computers sitting on my desk right now watching you and the chat room. Yeah, so, and then I've got computerized radiography that I have to, whenever I take radiographs, I can just download them to a DVD and hand it to them and say, here's your radiograph.
How cool is that? Alan, it's so nice to meet you. I'll see you on the airwaves. And if I ever need a shoe, I'll let you know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Little Paisley Underground. The Bangles. We were talking, Phone Ranger and I were talking about this, because Heather's going to see this group December 5th in San Francisco. Der Bangles. Very fine. Fine group. Give Susanna my regards.
Done and done.
Okay. Just tell her I'm thinking of her.
I'm going to wear a shirt that says, Leo says hi.
Yeah. You never know. Some, you know, show's big in L.A. She could know who I am, yeah. Maybe. That nerdy guy on the radio? Yeah, that's the one. Jordan in Glendale, California. Hi, Jordan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I work for a small company of about 30 people, of which I'm in charge of the video department. And I have a 6 terabyte G-RAID drive that I call my mothership, where I store all of the video. And for the people that edit under me, they have 1 terabyte drives, and I give them footage for their projects. I'm having a hard time keeping track of what's where.
Yeah, I bet.
As you can imagine.
So wait a minute. They come to you, and you have your 6 terabyte RAID, array, or whatever it is, and yes. Then they say, I want some footage, and you have some software, I guess, that you say...
No.
You do this by hand. You copy, you put in a, put the terabyte drive in the, well, you probably have one of those drive toasters, those ejectable drive bays, right?
Something no, like we're that. Not even
not even that good, huh?
I have a little organization system with the files, so I pick which client I want them to work on.
Drag them over.
I get, like, the first file, and yeah, they have everything. So what I'd like to do is what the graphic designers at my work do, which is store everything, you know, in the cloud, and then they can download it and it's safe up there. But obviously that's difficult for something as large as video. So, and you know, the owner of the company is looking to me for answers on what to do, because I told her this is a problem, but I don't have a solution.
Microsoft bought a company called, I think it was Expression Media. And it was designed for, I think, still photography, but I believe it also did video. It's Microsoft Expression, and they've now changed it into Expression Blend. I don't even know what that is, an Expression Web. I would, you know, this was the program people were using to keep track of media files. My friend, you know, I have a good friend, Peter Krog. In fact, he's coming to town. And I'll ask him when he comes to town. But he wrote the book, the Digital Asset Management book, or the DAM, D-A-M book. And he's an expert photographer who has really, you know, dealt directly with these issues of how do you, as you imagine, the same problem with video as photography. How do you manage these thousands of files, some of them online, some of them offline, some of them nearline? How do you find them, get them, move them around, get them to where you want?
Right. Exactly. I'm going to look those up. That sounds good. Because my main problem is how do I – we work from home, and I'm having to meet the other people to trade footage. So I'm trying to figure out how I can let them work off the – let's say I do a video shoot. I have the footage. How do I get it to them without sending them 60 gigabytes over the weekend in an email?
That's even more complicated. So they're not even on site now. You've got to get this stuff to them. So ideally what you would have is somewhere you'd – I know it's expensive, but somewhere you'd store this 6 terabytes of video online, and then you could just send them pointers. You wouldn't have to move files around. You just say, hey, you need this, 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 and this.
Now, we have a little bit of a budget, so I'm looking for, you know, the best way to do this. Is there a way for them to edit – through where I store it on the cloud without
yeah.
having to download the footage?
Oh, yeah.
First?
Yeah, there are online editing
what
programs as well. Well,
I know, you know, I know people who work on television shows have got a, there's got to be a way for this.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on it. This is a really interesting question.
I think it's a similar problem for a lot of people with photos. So it's, I think,
yeah, still certainly the problem is the video, of course, the file sizes are much, much larger.
Exactly.
You know, you can, thanks to the Chromebook, there is a brisk market in Chrome extensions, and there are, in fact, video editors that will work inside of Chrome, like WeVideo is the one I know of, WEVIDEO. I don't know if it's good enough for professional use.
I do. Last year, we did about 400 videos.
It might be. Oh, I mean, yeah. I think the key is you're going to store your data online, And then you're going to say, here are the assets you need for your video. And give them a link to those assets in WeVideo, which is, WeVideo is kind of amazing. It gives you a, you know, it uses Google Drive. So you'd have to buy enough storage on Google Drive for all of that stuff, right?
Okay.
And then WeVideo lets you, just like, you know, file, just like Final Cut, it lets you create a project, bring in assets, edit the assets online, and all of that stuff. That seems to me to be a consumer solution. I'm going to look and see. Padre SJ in our chat room says there's a program called Digital Fountain. he's an expert in enterprise stuff. He does our This Week in Enterprise Technology. They experts in broadcast and real-time data transport. So that's, yeah, and they're owned by Qualcomm. So
okay.
So that's another one you might want to look at. That's going to be more of an enterprise solution designed around streaming media. What do they edit in right now? What program? Using Final Cut, Premiere, iMovie? Final Cut 10. Say again?
Final Cut 10.
Final Cut 10, okay.
Yeah.
Bright Cove is very well known. Jeff Needles in our chat room. Mentions Bright Cove, very well known as a online video platform. They may also have the kind of technologies that you need. So there's three names to look at. Bright Cove has Video Cloud.
Okay.
And kind of the same idea. You have assets that you could then deliver to them, or they could, I presume, assemble. Where does the media end up? Does it end up on a DVD or online or...
Majority of it is online on YouTube.
YouTube. Yeah, Bright Cloud goes directly to YouTube.
Does, what was I going to say? Do you know any, is XSAN, X-S-A-N, is that relatable to any of this?
Well, so what those are local storage area network drives. We use XSAN-like stuff. They're big drives that are local. And that's what we use. We record a lot of video, but it's all local. It's not going to help you on the internet. But we record our, as I'm talking right now, our video, the video coming from the cameras is recorded to an XSAN.
Okay.
And then, actually, it's an XSAN-like device. It's a SAN. And then our editors don't have to move files around at all. They get on the SAN. It looks to them like a local drive, and they can edit them directly. But that's only good for local use. It'd be fine for you. I'm not sure exactly what the right answer is. This is, of course, way over my head. But fortunately, we have some good people in the chat room who seem to have some answers. I would look at those three solutions anyway, and we'll put that in the show notes too, techguylabs.com. And all you Hollywood types, if you've got an idea, let me know or visit our website, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chat room and I kind of talking about this interesting issue. It's really not a consumer issue, but what if you have big files and you got to move them around, video files? You got to make not only keep track of the assets, but you've got to get them to your editors all over the world. Apparently, James Cameron, when he made Avatar, used this digital fountain technology we mentioned. If you think about it, most Hollywood movies these days have a huge amount of computer-generated graphics. And those graphics are often not done in the U.S. Ireland, Africa, all over the world, right? So... you get these people creating these graphics. They need to transport these files. They're giant, really big files. Let the director see them. So maybe you need to have a streaming kind of low-quality version so the director can give you some input, move them around. Apparently, I mean, in Avatar, was half the movie was generated by the computer, more probably. So there's one solution. Although we have many listeners, as I mentioned, in Hollywood, and some of them have told me, you know, we still mail hard drives. You just wrap a hard drive in bubble wrap and ship it. If you think about bandwidth, I think it was Reed Hastings at Netflix who said he had this insight when he first started Netflix. He was still a graduate student in college. And his professor asked an interesting question. Which has more bandwidth? A fiber optic cable from San Francisco to New York or a truck carrying 5,000 hard drives? If you think about it, the truck might have more bandwidth. It could certainly, you know, maybe it's going to take a longer time, but it can transport an awful lot of data, you know. So sometimes shipping a drive is literally the fastest way to move data. Reed Hastings thought about that, and he said, you know, maybe the best way to rent movies would be by mail, mailing them the DVD. If we can get them the DVD in the next day or two, that might be faster than downloading it. Maybe. Maybe. Bandwidth might not be the right term. Throughput, maybe that. Maybe you're right. Chat room, UOS DeWiz says throughput, not bandwidth. Yeah, same idea. How much data can you transport and how fast can you do it? Carla in Irvine, California, you're next. Hi, Carla.
Hi.
Much easier problem, I hope.
I hope. Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a new to the smartphone world, but I have a Samsung Galaxy S3 that I got because, you know, I could put a memory card in it, an SD card in it for videos and photos. Mm. And so I was researching cards and trying to pick one out, and I started seeing all these reviews about problems with the cards, you know, crashing after a few months' use or slowing down, you know, draining the battery, slowing it down, but mostly, you know, crashing after a couple months.
Yeah.
Mostly the SanDisk is what I noticed in the reviews.
I use SanDisk almost exclusively. Here's the thing. When you make a million of anything and 0.1% is bad, 0.1% of a million is still thousands.
Okay.
So any product, and we're seeing this now with the Xbox One. We saw it last week with the PlayStation 4. Many hundreds, maybe thousands of people reporting problems, but it's just a fraction of the total. We're in a world where so many of these things are out there that, of course, some people have problems. Nothing is perfect. You'd be shocked if SanDisk shipped a million micro SD cards and nobody reported a problem.
So do you think I shouldn't
They're
be
fine.
Concerned about the brand
They're
or the...
fine. Well, I would get SanDisk. I wouldn't get a brand you never heard of, but SanDisk is a very good brand, and that's what I use almost exclusively in all of the phones that use microSD. Understand, flash is not perfect. You know, when you use a camera that has a flash SD card flash memory, maybe one time in 100, they fail. So, you know, as we always say, you know, don't just leave your pictures on the phone or leave your pictures on the camera. Make sure you back them up because stuff fails. It's not unusual. But I don't think SanDisk is a bad product. In fact, like I said, I use it exclusively in my phones. You just happen to pick the brand I use.
So if I picked one that was like a 64 gigabyte, does the class of the disk or
that's the speed
size
with
of it?
The class has to do with the speed with which you can write to it.
Okay.
And the phone doesn't really, is not what I would call a super speed device.
Okay.
So anything class 4 better be fine. You don't need to spend the extra money for a class 10 card.
Okay, class 4.
Class 4 is kind of the cheapo cards.
And should I be saving my photos to my internal storage first, or?
Well, what you'll notice on that Samsung phone is that if you're doing it in burst mode, that is, you're taking many pictures at once, the phone will only let you save internally. Because it just can't, the flash isn't fast enough. It's really not the flash, it's the bus, the data bus to the flash. Just can't keep up. So at least this happened on my Galaxy S4, when I wanted to do burst mode, it warned me. It said, you know, when you shoot in burst mode, we're going to save it to the local drive because it's faster. But normally, taking a picture, saving it to the SD card is fine. The real issue with SD cards on Android is, and this is true actually on Windows Phone as well, it's not just an extension of what you've already got. It's kind of a separate storage area. It's treated a little bit differently. It is, for instance, not all applications can be moved to it. It doesn't just expand your memory. If you have a 16 gig phone and you buy a 32 gig SD card, you don't now have 48 gigs. You have 16 and 32, and the 32 can be used for some stuff. It can be used to store media. It's great for music, video, pictures. Less great for putting applications on. In fact, some applications you cannot put them on.
Okay.
So just think of it as a media storage drive in your...
I was just thinking videos and photos for myself. I'm not understanding the discussions on formatting. Like, I've seen a lot of discussion about XFAT formatting and...
You don't have to think about that either. You don't have a choice.
Great. Oh, I like that.
Just stick the card in. It'll work. There is a format command in some of the file managers on Android. It doesn't ask you what format you want. There's one and only one. Just let it do it.
Okay, great.
In other words, you're agonizing, Carla, about something that's not important.
Excellent.
In general. Just pick a card, put it in. Don't assume that it's perfect. You should be backing it up. But that's one of the advantages of putting your photos on the SD card. You can actually take it out of the phone and put it in your computer and quickly copy it, or take a USB cable and connect your phone up. But you should not, and I get calls a lot. I got a call, broke my heart. Guy said, I took pictures of my late dog. She passed away last year, and I took them on my phone. I have many, many hundreds of pictures of the dog on my phone, and the memory died. And is there any way to get it back? And there isn't. He hadn't been making a copy. Just like anything else, one copy of a file on any digital device is at risk. You should always have extra copies. Always be backing them. That's all.
Right.
Then you don't care.
Right. Okay. General question about cell phones in general, because we're going through a period of several people getting new phones, and I've had contradictory advice on when you get your new phone, you usually have like 40% battery charged, whether or not you should charge it right away before you even use it.
Carla, you really like to worry, don't you?
I'm just curious.
I love it. No, this is great. Don't even worry. Just use it. Don't worry. So the way lithium ion works, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
There is a lot of misinformation about batteries out there.
Yeah.
Because of nickel metal hydride and, much worse, the earlier nickel cadmium batteries, there was a memory effect, blah, blah. None of this affects lithium ion.
Okay.
Use it till it dies. Charge it up. Use it till it dies. Charge it up. Doesn't matter. Okay. You have a certain number of cycles. Mm-hmm. A half cycle counts as half towards that full. So if you've got typically 500 charges, when you charge it halfway and use it, that's half a charge, not a whole one. You got 500. That's it.
Okay.
Nothing more to remember. In general, it's best to keep the phone plugged in as long as you can. It's fine to use half charged until it dies and then use it again. There's no conditioning involved at all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. If you are very wealthy and have a very evolved taste, you might have been interested in the auction last night that Sotheby's did to raise money for Product Red. That's Bono's charity to support AIDS education and in Africa. Johnny Ive, the great designer for Apple, and one of his best buddies, Mark Newson, decided to do a benefit auction of some of their favorite designs for charity, for Product Red. And there were all sorts of interesting things. A pregnant duck pitcher, beautiful pitcher. They thought they were going to get maybe $40,000 to $60,000. They got it for $106,000. The Hermes saddle, $137,000. A pair of solid gold ear pods from Apple. They thought, man, we might get $20,000 to $25,000 for this. $461,000. Now, it's for charity. So I'm sure the very, very wealthy people who bid on this auction knew that and overbid. But wow, solid rose gold ear pods, $461,000. Wow. You know, the thing that I'd be most interested in, oh, this is interesting, the Steinway unique red Parlor Grand Model A piano, worth $150,000 to $200,000, sold for $1.9 million. Wow. Yeah, that's Dr. Evil. That's Dr. Evil money, isn't it? The one I was most interested in is this beautiful, one-of-a-kind Leica camera that Johnny Ive designed. It was just gorgeous. Sotheby's thought, hey, we're going to get about $500,000 for it. Sold for $1.8 million. Lot of money raised for a Product Red. Boy, a Stormtrooper helmet from Star Wars. They thought maybe $10,000 to $15,000. Looks like it's autographed maybe by George Lucas. $245,000. A thermal window designed for the space shuttle. $845,000. A cosmonaut suit worn on a Soviet space agency mission. $305,000. These were all things that Mark and Johnny thought, we really like the design here. Oh, here's something you would have liked, Heather. The Christian Louboutin high-heeled boots in Product Red Red. You know, just $50,000. That's actually, that was a bargain.
That's nothing.
That's a bargain. A Mac Pro. Now this Mac Pro is not out yet. This is the new, that cylindrical Mac Pro that Apple plans to sell next month. Apple says that those are going to start at $2,500. But the bright red, product red one, one of a kind, $977,000. Let's round it up. Make it a million. Why not just bid a million? Come on. Why be cheap?
And how long till it's obsolete?
Oh, tomorrow. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Brandon, Springfield, Missouri. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Brandon.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Oh, Brandon, I'm great. How you doing?
I'm well exercised.
What are you on your bicycle? What are you up to?
I walked my dog. I went the wrong way, and I had to go all the way around, and I think I went about a mile to 2 miles.
How old are you, Brandon?
11.
Oh, you need the exercise. This is good. You're laying the foundation. You want to walk as much as possible. What can I do for you?
Well, I do YouTube. Well, I'm going to. And one of the biggest problems I come into is a lot of the YouTubers I look at. Have introductions.
Yeah, like big 3D thing, like the movies, right? Bum 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 bum. This is a Brandon. This is a Brandon. This is a Brandon production. Like that?
Yeah. Kind of like that.
Yeah. Better than that, though, right? So, sure. Those are usually done with programs designed for 3D graphics or 2D graphics. Do you have a Mac?
No, I have a Windows.
So Apple offers a very inexpensive, I think it's $100 program called Motion that a lot of people use for this. That's what Motion is designed to do, 2D animated graphics. And that would be perfect for that. For Windows, I don't know. Chat room will help me. So he's using Windows. What's a program that will do 2D animated graphics for his opening? What do you have in mind, Brandon?
Not something too big. Just like...
No singing?
I don't know.
Hey, I'm offering. I'm offering. So, of course, Blender's free. And Blender will do this, but it's not easy to learn. But I think if you learned Blender, that would be a great thing. I don't know how much time you want to spend. That's blender.org. And it is a 3D, 2D graphics package that makes animation. It makes, you could do a Pixar movie in Blender.
I'm looking at the chat room. Alter
yeah.
Opla says I need to get a Mac or Lightwear for PC.
Lightwave is good. Lightwave is a very nice program.
That's what I want for Christmas.
Yeah. Now somebody is saying wax. I don't know wax. Is that wax on or wax off? Wax video. So there are a number of good choices. And I think in a way this is a good thing for you to learn, right? Wax is open source. It's a video compositing program. And that's kind of what this is compositing. And it'll do special effects. This looks like a very good choice, and this is free. It's from debugmode.com. Wax. I think that is a good choice. These are, Brandon, you understand that this is part of what you're learning. If you want to be a videographer or video producer, which I presume is a reason. Why do you want to make YouTube videos?
Well,
You think this is a future?
I know a lot of people who also do YouTube.
Yeah, I think this is a future. You want to be like PewDiePie. You want to be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't know who he is.
You don't know who PewDiePie is?
I've never seen him.
I think he's the number one YouTuber. And he has 15 million subscribers. So I encourage you to learn this. I mean, this is great stuff. And you're young, which means you have a lot of energy and time. And you're obviously smart. So, there are a number of there are commercial programs like After Effects that's for Windows that you can use. But I like the idea of using Blender or Wax and learning those tools because they will make you, you'll use them more, right? Now you'll use it for the open, but then next you could use it to, you could do some green screen stuff where you're in a fairy tale land and all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of, I think a lot of value to learning something like this. You know, when you're 11, when you're in fifth grade. I wish I'd learned something like that when I was in fifth grade. I'd be gainfully employed by now. It's like learning a language. It's easier when you're younger. It seems like you have more time. Much better doing this than, Chad, playing Minecraft all day. You'd actually learn a skill. Eh. Oh, sure, there's going to be jobs. There's going to be lots of jobs for people who can use Minecraft in the future. Good luck, Brandon. I think that's great. Do you have your YouTube channel yet? Brandon?
Hello.
Do you have your YouTube channel yet?
Yeah, I have it, but I don't have any videos.
Okay. When you get some videos, call me back and we'll give you a free plug.
Okay.
All right? Okay, go walk the dog take another walk. Thank you for joining me, everybody. Have a great Geek Week. Happy Thanksgiving. I'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.